Well, the last time George Ure was with me, 3.5 years ago. Talk about how fast time goes by. So I can't think of a better person to join us as we talk about 2014 than George Ure, the urban survivalist. We're going to talk with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Ure, business consultant, financial writer, publishes, of course, the website urbansurvival.com. and peoplenomics.com. He's been a senior vice president of an international airline. He has been a school president. You name it, he has done it. His website, the main one, urbansurvival.com, focuses on long wave economics. Welcome back, George Ure. Hey, it's been too long, George. How are you?
I'm doing great, George, and congratulations, by the way, on making year number 11. We have been listening to you out here in the woods of East Texas on WOAI out of San Antonio, which is the closest.
Great station, our number one station down there in Texas.
It's a great station.
That was one of our first network stations ever. A long, long time ago.
Launching premiere back when?
Yeah, years, just years. It's something. So what's new with you? What have you been doing 3.5 years since you and I talked?
Well, I'm still fascinated, George, with this whole area of computer-assisted prediction.
Mm-hmm.
There are just so many ways when you look at how we consider what the future will bring, that computers can really increase the accuracy and the breadth of our research. Some of those technologies, I guess I could list them. There's astrology. You know, you can get astrology programs all over the internet. You have had Graham Hancock on a couple of times that I've caught. Yeah. And he talks about using trance and drugs in the book Supernatural to get at various aspects of the future. And there are lots of ways that you can induce different mental states using technologies like binaural beats, for example, to entrain the mind. And then there, of course, is the language shift studies that I wrote extensively about. And here lately, I'm off on the trail of word frequency analysis. And there's a website that I'm involved with now called Nostracodis.com. And that uses a technology that really came into its own during World War II. And that's where the U.S. and the Allies were looking at neutral and Axis newspapers and doing word counts on key stories related to statistics, government production, government output, things like that. And they would infer how effective some of their bombing campaigns were. So we're presently using that to kind of get a grip on the future. And of course, there are interesting other ways that the internet lets us look at the future. One of the nice things in this Nostracodis software that we've built is that you can look at, instead of looking across the entire internet, which can be a very noisy place, as you know, it lets you zoom in and look just at a group of websites that you get to define.
Very targeted, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very targeted. So, for example, on Fukushima, I've got a list of websites that I look at the language use on, and those websites all think that we should be dead by now and the world is ending, and that may be if
they have any, you know, they've got steam coming out of Reactor 3 now.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not saying that it can't happen, believe me. But on the other hand, there is. On the other side of the equation, there's also strong language that comes out of the vertical group of nuclear engineering magazines, discussion groups, and academic groups. And so the truth that's going to arrive from the future is really something that will, oh gosh, fall in what I think I'd call an arbitraged range between the extremes. That's usually where the data shows up.
How do you feel about the internet? Do you think it's getting better and better for us, or is it getting worse?
Fukushima? Or just
the internet in
general?
The internet
at all. Yeah, I'm very skeptical of the internet. I wrote an ebook that you can get on Amazon called Broken Web, and it's all about the pending collapse of the internet. And I think we're already seeing the holes in the dam on that, George. We're seeing it in the stock market. I think Twitter's now down close to 20% in the last week. There's something of an exodus, my friends tell me, of kids, the ones that don't want mom and dad looking at the computer.
That's right. They're leaving Facebook.
Leaving Facebook. Yeah, they're going places like Snapchat. And the Snapchat feature that makes it so attractive to the kids is that 5 minutes after a kid sends a message, it's gone, and mom and dad can't come in to audit. Now, they do keep copies.
By the way, I just had a story tonight, George, that 40 million people got hacked from Snapchat tonight. 40 million people.
Yeah. And 40 million seems to be kind of an interesting number, because that's also the number of people who got hit
at Target.
On Target, exactly.
Right.
And that gives you the idea when you sit back and start looking at the data coming in about how bad this kind of thing can be. Let me tell you a story about a fellow named Cesar Marchetti. Cesar Marchetti is a genius. He's one of the best researchers in the world, and in a field of study, one of his specialties is S-curves. And here's how S-curves work. If you have a little agar dish and you're growing bacteria, and every day you come in and count how many bacteria there are in the agar dish, if you add the totals up day after day after day, that total will describe an S-curve. And so these S-curves are remarkably prescient because you can apply them to things. So I'll give you an example. On the Peoplenomics side, which is my subscriber newsletter, back in about 2009, I looked at the data coming in on bank failures in the wake of IndyMac, and I projected using this S-curve theory that we ought to peak at about 6,500 branches closed. I think right now we're at about 6,300.
Wow.
But that gets us into that, we really do have some mathematical tools that can be applied to data that tell us a couple of things, one of which is this net stuff. We're probably maybe not even to the halfway point in disclosures yet.
Jeez, that's frightening.
Yeah, but look at it. It's just like bacteria filling up a dish. We go through these ramp ups. We're in the ramp up right now, and as we go through the ramp up, we're seeing the same kind of ramp in social media. Now, social media, like the Facebook, Twitter thing, it's been in this huge ramp up, and now what happens is the bacteria is moving out toward the edge of the petri dish, and we're running out of agar. And as we run out of agar, that S-curve begins to roll over at the top. And when that occurs, we start seeing replacements coming along in things like social media. And it could be that 2014 is when the rose really begins to lose its bloom in social.
It's fascinating how things like YouTube, will garner, for example, Miley Cyrus and her videos. Hundreds of millions of hits. In the old days, George, when we just had some radio stations and three major television networks, that was unheard of.
Oh, sure. But everything, George, has been commoditized. I mean, the reason that can happen is because we've gone to a super concentrated form of media, and America has really wrapped its arms around the concept of attention deficit disorder. Now, I don't think that attention deficit disorder is as nearly as widely
prevalent,
yeah, as the medical community diagnoses. I think that really, if anything, it's almost a coping skill, because we live in an information age which is so incredibly dense. ADD is almost a coping strategy to put up with the fact that you can be exposed to tens of thousands of words per day, and much of that information is in tweets, it's in super compact form, so you have to be engaged and really on your game to get it.
Would you say that text messaging is social networking?
No, there's a brilliant guy. I think he's still at Northwestern University, Andrew Odlizko, and He would, I believe it's fair to say that in his papers, he's characterized that whole thing as SMS, short message services. And that's part of this becoming the overloaded society. We've seen a tremendous uptick in SMS, whether it's video. In fact, if you look at the videos on YouTube, I have a daughter, Denise, who's always trying to produce, you know, the next viral video. You know, kids do this stuff.
They love it. Yeah, they're little producers.
Yeah. And what she did some research, and she found that if a video is going to go viral, almost nothing over a minute and a half goes viral. Because if it's longer than that, yeah, it may have better content, maybe more meaningful, but it isn't getting the traction, the turnover.
That's right.
And so that's exactly what's going on. Everything is becoming shorter and shorter and shorter. I'm writing a novel right now, and I'm halfway through it, and it's about 31,000. So it'll be about a 60,000-70,000 page work when I'm done. The problem is I don't know if anyone's going to read it. Now, I think it's a great novel. It's called Dreamover, and it's about, typical coast kind of content. But the interesting thing about this is that what people consume, the real hot market, for example, in Kindle eBooks, is these real short 99-cent books. 10 to 20 to 30 pages.
You're right. Yeah.
You know, and the same thing is going on in education.
But this is primarily for a younger audience, right?
Exactly. Well, and the older audience is having to become super time crunched just to compete with the younger audience. And so that's why education's nature is changing.
Well, listen to this, George. This is a great observation, and I want you to react to it. I was thinking about all the old-time television programs that we had back in the late 50s and early 60s. The Arthur Godfreys, the Art Linkletters, the Jack Parrs.
The Groucho's, all these
people who are funny comedians, Jack Benny. Mm-hmm. And the one common denominator about all of them, they were all older people.
Sure.
And those guys would not make it on television today.
Oh, they'd be laughed off.
They wouldn't do it. I mean, like the movie Twilight about these young vampires. I mean, in the old days, you had this wretched looking Nosferatu and things like that. I mean, they wouldn't make it nowadays.
Well, and that's kind of our social event horizon has changed. And part of it, I hate to say it, comes back on the education community. And it also comes back on the investment community. It comes back on the education community because the state, the government, has taken over so much of the role that used to be played by parents. When I was a kid, which I won't tell you how long ago it was, but I can get Social Security any day. When I was a kid...
I think you are on Marconi's first talk show. When
you I worked with Marconi on 80-meter CW one night. But education, you see, has replaced parents when it comes to talking about the facts of life. I mean, the facts of life is now kindergarten, first grade, second grade kind of curriculum material. And then the investment community is only putting its money into marketing campaigns, which are branding kids by the time they're 8, 9, 10 years old. The branding people have really worked that younger demographic. And then the kids, in turn, are sitting around looking at the older people, the grays like me, and they're saying to themselves, well, wait a minute, you're stiffing us with all the bills for your Social Security, and you want us to emulate you guys? So, absolutely.
What made the change, though? I mean, here's another oldie. What's My Line, right?
Oh,
you had all these old panelists on there. The late Dorothy Kilgallen, Arlene Francis, Bennett Cerf. I mean, John Daly moderated. They were all older people. They'd never make it today. What happened? Where did that switch occur?
I think it happened because of the arrival of infotainment. A lot of those older entertainers had their start in burlesque.
In burlesque or in radio.
Or in radio. And look at radio. Radio has just, I mean, I was a big city news director for 13 years in Seattle. And I can tell you for a fact that radio ain't the same as it was when I started off.
Nope.
There are basically two or three national network feeds, and my wife and I took a long driving trip recently, George, about 5,000 miles, and all across the country, no matter where you go, you can pick up the same stations with the same talk show hosts all the way across the country.
That's right.
Yours is the only one worth listening to. Don't get me wrong.
Thank you. Thank you.
But usually, you know, there used to be the local DJ who had the interesting show on in the mornings and a pretty good midday guy and so forth. And a lot of stations had just, you know, it's nothing more than Muzak. And so for the consumer, there's no incentive. There's no unique listening proposition, if you will.
Well, but somebody at some point said, we have to do all films geared to young people. We have to do all TV shows. Geared to younger people.
Yeah, the old people.
But they're the ones with the money.
Yeah, but they don't get out. I mean, I'm telling you that most old people are too busy trying to make ends meet to have much of a social life. I mean, I was an executive for years and years, and I worked 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. I didn't have a social life. Yeah, I had a fancy car, but the rest of the time, it was nose to the grindstone. And so all that's going to blow up here in the next 20 years because we're coming to this point where the younger generation is embracing robotics, Arduino, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And the kids get it that robotics will be waiting on them hand and foot if they can wrap their arms around the technology.
And they understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm working on a project with a client right now of an advanced robotics sort. And George, I have to tell you, it's amazing what you can do with robotics. The difficulty right now is in this transition period, we haven't figured out how to make the economy work. Because as we see that burlesque crowd go away, you know, the ones you just listed.
Mm-hmm.
The real question is what's going to be the future in music of some of the early rappers when they try to transition out of rap, just like the early television guys transition or the early burlesque guys transition to television. Where will be the new LZ for this next generation?
Yeah, that's a good point. And when you look at, we're coming up to the break, but I want you to think about this. When you look at 2014, the year we have now begun, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, I've got a real simple, short list. The basics are more disclosures about NSA surveillance. We have a global war due 2020 to 2022. Unemployment probably will bottom in 2014 because by 2022, I think there's a strong case we're back to 19-20% Greek kind of unemployment rates. The Fed at some point will have to stop passing out money on the street corners to their friends. And with all of that, we've got Jewish people in Israel thinking that when Ariel Sharon passes, there may be a...
Which could be soon.
Which could be very soon. Yeah, he's in critical. He's got kidney failure going on now.
Yeah.
Rabbi Itzhak Kaduri was predicting that the Messiah would reveal himself in Jerusalem shortly after Sharon's passing.
Yeah, just at a show-in. Hold on for a second, George. We're going to hit the break. We'll talk more about what you think could happen in 2014, and we'll take some calls with George Uhrer, Urban Survival, when we come right back. Well, thank you for making our television program Beyond Belief one of the most watched programs on the Guyam Television Network. Truly appreciate that. And if you haven't seen it yet, you can just register for it and take a look at it and all the other videos that are available. Simply go to the website beyondbelief.com. That's it, beyondbelief.com. George, you're with us. We'll take your calls. George, let's get that list out for 2014 again. And you were talking about more NSA situations, the possibility of war. And, of course, the story today, Ariel Sharon, 85 years old, been in a coma for years. He's going to go pretty soon.
Well, and that leaves two sides in the Middle East expecting someone of very large spiritual significance to show up. And the odds of war seem like they will be increasing over the next few years, especially if I'm right about the economy. We have a couple of possible turn dates for the market. It could be that the market high comes in over the balance of this week, or we could continue up until the end of about January. And then there's another scenario where we keep going up until the first part of May. But then we come down, perhaps 1640, 1540 on the S&P. We go back up for a summer rally, and then it gets real bad next year. And there's plenty of reasons why it could. The problem we have as a country is that peak prosperity has done passed us by, and we've exported so many jobs, and we have such a problem with robotics coming down the road. I mean, 3D printing and all the rest of it. In fact, you can buy, remember the replicator from Star Trek?
Yes.
You can now buy a 3D scanner and plug that into a 3D printer. And so you can actually take a plastic part.
And it makes it.
Yeah.
I don't get how it works, but it's amazing.
Oh, I understand how it works. And it's still amazing.
I mean, how does it work? I mean, they make, you know, and eventually they're going to make artificial organs and stuff that way.
Oh, worse than that, they're starting to work now on devices that will print food. I know it's weird, but you can take, just like in a FDM deposition, how do I explain it? I better not.
Well, I mean, they're also doing this. I mean, let's say somebody tragically lost his nose.
Oh, I'll print you a new
They've
one.
Got they print a new nose, then they grow stem cells on the nose.
Sure.
And then they just put it back on him.
Yeah, and they can print meat, and they're learning how to print vegetables, and so it's just pick whatever flavor you want, print it. You know, it's not a single pass print. You know, you put down layers of the proteins. Just like you do in metal printing. A friend of mine's an oil rig engineer. He's offshore all the time. But he goes places like China and talks about, you know, how to build these drill bits. They're making things down in the labs at places like Schlumberger that could not even be machined by humans until this new process came along. There wasn't a way to basically build a Mobius strip using conventional machinery, if that makes any sense.
You write a lot about a Russian economist. Tell me about that.
Nicholas Kondratiev, brilliant guy. In about 1926, Stalin the Butcher asked Nicholas Kondratiev, give me some good news about the Americans because we want communism to bury them. So Kondratiev did a lot of research, and he traced the cycle of wheat and other commodities back into the Middle Ages. And what he came up with were regular cycles of about 50 to 60 years, roughly, that economies go through regular booms and collapses, very much like in the biblical text about the 50-year jubilee in Leviticus. He found that that very thing was operating through the Middle Ages and is still going on. And if you look at the start of the U.S. Civil War, 1861, and tack on 50-some years to it, you come to World War One. And then if you tack on another 50-some years, you come to when Kennedy started dispatching American forces to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then if you tack on another 50, 54 years, you come to this period that's right ahead. That's the war cycle. There's also an economic cycle that tends to run ahead of wars. For example, the American Depression, the Great Depression here, 1929, and that's what Kondratiev told Stalin. And Stalin was just pleased as punch. Why, America's going to have a great, great depression. Great news, communism will triumph. No, said Kondratiev, because they'll come back stronger than ever. And that, of course, ended Kondratiev in a gulag. But his work is really first rate. The problem we have is that the war cycle is due in this 2022 period, and to get into it, there's generally a major long-term economic mess, And that's why making a forecast of economic hardship in America in the 2015-2017 period that could be as bad as the Great Depression ain't exactly a hard call to make.
No, not at all. Let's take a few calls here for you, George. Let's go to John in Florida, east of the Rockies. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Good, John. Thank you.
Oh, hey, I'm from Detroit, too. So
oh, great.
God bless you. Hey, my question is with the Fukushima situation, why aren't the nations of the world as impactful as this is to our world, aren't getting involved?
And outraged. George, what do you think of that? You would think nations would be all over the place, including the United States.
Well, there's an even scarier part. I think that, and I write about this once in a while, and not to put a religious spin on it, but with the events in Fukushima and the Gulf of Mexico, one could, with the Gulf oil spill,
yeah,
and the Corexit and all that, one could make an interesting case that a third of the waters are in the process of getting bittered. And
sounds
and
then, biblical, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's strictly so. And so, yes, everyone should be getting concerned about it. But the problem is, what can you really do about it? I mean, this is not one of those things where you can hold a concert and raise some money and buy some relief. This is one that just takes solid engineering, boots on the ground. People are going to get hurt. People are going to get diseased and injured in the process. But it's like Chernobyl, except worse. And so it's going to be a long-term environmental disaster. My wife and I, George, have looked at moving back to the Northwest because we have family up there. But at the moment, you know, the middle of Texas off to the side of the jet stream.
Looks pretty darn good right now.
Yeah, it does. And we're at 600 feet in case the canaries blow. So it's like, yeah.
Well, and I think the other reason they don't really want to disclose what's going on at Fukushima, we're going to do a full program on that soon, is one, panic. Two, as you just said, there's nothing they can do about it. And so I think they're prepared to take the losses silently. I mean, somebody dies of cancer, nobody's going to say, hey, it's because of the Fukushima radiation. They're just going to die and say, oh, my God, they got cancer.
Well, remember that the Japanese culture is not as litigious as ours. They don't have as many law firms filing the same kind of
class actions,
exactly. So there's not a financial incentive, and they do have high respect for their key corporations. And TEPCO's a big gun. I mean, those people run a good business. They just happen to have a reactor in the wrong place at the wrong time, and along comes disaster. There isn't much you can do but gut it out and work the problem.
I think they're also concerned that we will come down on our 120 nuke plants because it could happen there.
George, if we have, and this is one of those ongoing stories we keep looking at, the Canary Island tsunami potential.
Oh, yeah, that thing, if that thing goes.
We could have 10 Fukushima-like disasters up and down the West Coast.
East Coast, yeah.
Yeah, if that ever happened. And so we should all be learning lessons here about nuclear power. I'm a great fan of solar, but the cheapest, the best answer for all of our energy is smaller, lighter vehicles and tons of insulation and LED lighting. I mean, those are really ways that we can reduce energy consumption. But we don't seem really in a hurry to solve the real problems of the world. It's like immigration. Immigration, we need immigration so that we have enough people paying into Social Security. And yet, at the same time, there are those who argue, look at all the problems. There will be the Mexification of America if we open the gates. But the problem is, why not? Those things are all industries now. You can buy shares in prisons, if you will.
That's true. Let's go to Nana in New York City. Hi there. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you very much. Hello, George. Happy New Year.
You too.
Thank you.
George, I'm a 21st century visionist, and I've been sent a couple of different images. And I see 2014 says that the theme for this year, 2014, for the people is what you see is no dream. there is going to be a surge because the new elders that are stepping up, the new 50-year-olds, are going to gather together, they're going to rally together, so to speak, and realize that the only way they are going to make it through is self-sufficiency. Neighborhoods themselves are going to start creating jobs. People are going to realize that instead of wanting to pay the big corporations, for example, it's funny you were talking about radiation. This winter, so many homeowners have had their roofs collapse because of this radiation that's traveling in through our rains. And
I don't think radiation will make a roof collapse.
Well, there's something in the air, George. I already know three people that have had their roofs collapse.
That's because the snow.
Good old-fashioned values are going to take over.
I would love to believe that, but unfortunately, I'm a numbers guy. And I don't see it. The problem is it comes down to distribution. It comes down to mechanization. It comes down to least cost of production. We can build great product in America, but we can have that same product built in India, in China, and sell it even after the transportation cost for 20 to 40% less. And until the political structure in Washington gets enough testosterone rolling to be able to face some of the reality of the American worker being undercut by third world production facilities, we're stuck in this loop, unfortunately. And that's the kind of thing that leads to economic depression.
You talk about a major war in 2022. What do you see that would lead us up to that?
Well, we're seeing a couple of candidate places already. One of them is the Senkaku Islands off Okinawa, south of Japan.
The Chinese. They're fighting.
The Chinese want that. The Chinese want Taiwan. They want Senkaku because that could be their Gulf of Mexico. There is oil out there. There has been a lot of survey work done. China's got its eye on it. They're already developing the fields off of Vietnam. So obviously that's one. I don't think North Korea is as much of a threat as the media would have us believe. That's a threat that can be well modulated by China. The problem we have is when China wants to get a real return on their U.S. treasuries, even though they're decreasing their treasury holdings, somebody's got to buy our bonds. And as long as we're running a deficit, we've got serious structural problems to address, because unless we start paying a higher interest rate to our bondholders, the U.S. dollar declining in purchasing power, not a good investment.
No, not at all. Larry's in Cleveland and now on Coast to Coast. Hi, Larry.
Hello, George and George.
Hello.
And hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
can
we can. Me? Sure can.
Hey, I just got off Lake Erie and I'm heading in towards a couple of inner cities here in Cleveland.
Okay.
But anyway, I was listening and I was thinking back to 1984. And I like to say I won't put a spiritual twist on it, but I can't help but do that because it's got a spiritual vein to it. The high priest at the time, I was listening to this messianic program. They're born again Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
And they said something really struck a chord with me. They said the high priest at the time made the decision that prayer was the substitute for blood sacrifice, which was kind of interesting because their book, Leviticus, says there's no remission of sin without the shedding of blood. And talking about, forgiveness and everything, they had to offer animal sacrifices. And on this guy's deathbed that made this decision, and this Messianic Jew said it this way. He was a doctor. He said, Dr. Brown, I think was his name. He said, for a Jew to accept prayer as a substitute for blood sacrifice is like offering a man a glass of water or a vitamin in the desert. He chose the vitamin. The vitamin's good for you, but it won't save your life, spiritually speaking. And it was interesting because on his deathbed, and I think this could all be checked out, he had a vision, and he called God a hammer. He said, Almighty Hammer. And then he said this. He says, why are you crying? So the hammer, even in this judgment, was crying. And then he said, I see before me two ways, Sheol, which I guess in Hebrew is death and hell, and I see paradise. And then he said, I don't know where I'm going.
Well, there's a parable there, George, somewhere.
Yes, and you're going to tell me what it is, right?
No, I'm not.
The problem is that the future does leak through at an archetypical kind of level, and is given voice in various ways, whether it's channeling or talking to Pleiadians or peak religious experience. The problem is that there is a lot of noise in that signal. And so it's very difficult to discern which part is the real nubbins of the matter and which part is the onboard bias of the receiver. And that's such a tough one to nail down. About all you can do is consider as much data as you can and look for commonalities.
Stock market is at an all-time high, yet you think it could go down, down, down.
Well, I've kind of got a number around 17,250 in the Dow, which would be real nice to hit before it goes down. From an elegant, you know, kind of an Elliott wave perspective.
And then what does it go down to?
Oh, you don't. Do you really want me to say?
Yeah.
3,000.
Oh, come on, George.
No, 3,000. I mean, here's the problem. R.N. Elliott, has written some just marvelous books, older books.
That's the time to save and buy back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Play short on the way down using the ETFs, the exchange-traded funds that are what are called triple bear funds. They pay three times the normal decline, if you will, and then switch to the bullish funds on the way back up. Just because the market goes down doesn't mean you have to lose money. You just have to be awake and figure out which way the general market is going and get there before the rest of the herd figures it out.
So it creeps up to 17 plus, and then?
Well, then I think we start a two-year to three-year decline. If you step back and look at an inflation-adjusted Dow, which I tend to look at inflation-adjusted indices, you'll see that the market really did peak in 2000 with the internet bubble. Since then, we have come down and we've made basically two big bounces. The first bounce, 2001 to 2007, the next bounce, 2009 to present. And then when this one runs out, then we're set to make a decline that'll approximate the decline, except larger magnitude, maybe 1.6 times the decline that we saw when the tech bubble blew up.
Strangely, a 3,000 Dow is probably what the stocks are worth.
Yeah, that's the problem. And the only thing that's holding stocks up right now are artificially low interest rates, because if a stock is a $10 stock and paying 10 cents, it still looks like a reasonable proposition if the banks aren't paying any interest, or like my bank is paying, I think, 0.1% on passbook accounts.
Nice.
But what happens is when those rates go up, you can make a case that the stock market is, you know, 80% overvalued when the interest rates go up to even 5%.
George, we are out of time. Let's keep in touch. Come back before 3.5 years.
I promise I will, George.
All right,
thank you.
Be well. That's George Ure. You can get all his information at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, the numbers lady, Glynis McCants, joins us with her glimpse of 2014. And what we will do with her is when we take calls, we will take your personal calls this time.